Thank you for those who are bearing with us, staying with us for this. So I have an allergy actually, so these are undoubtedly difficult topics that we are discussing. Hare Krishna. It's not my they're being discussed from what is sometimes referred to as a conservative outlook or fanatical. I was speaking with Dhanavir Maharaj yesterday evening. Like myself, he's also considered in the conservative or fanatical wing of ISKCON, but as he pointed out, we haven't changed. We're just doing the same things and saying the same things as more or less all the devotees did when Prabhupada was here. There's everyone else who's changed and watered things down and changed things this way, that way, and the other way. And or as I pointed out two nights ago, a Tamil president pointed out to me that nowadays if you just want to follow Prabhupada in the way that we always used to do, you're considered a fanatic or something wrong with you. So, this evening I'm going to discuss what tends to be a very sensitive topic. Devotees tend to get quite upset, some of them, when these topics are discussed. The title is given Gender Roles, but specifically I want to talk about, especially women's roles. There's somewhat of a controversy going on in ISKCON over what should the role of women, or more precisely, spirit souls in the bodies of women. How should they behave? Because as Atma, as spirit soul, there is no basic difference between a devotee in a male body or a female body. For that matter, there's no difference between the Atma in the body of a dog and a cat and a fish and a tree. All are spirit souls. All are servants of Krishna. Nevertheless, in the Vedic culture, which Srila Prabhupada so often referred to in his books, there were very specific and different roles, social roles, for men and women. Actually, not only in the Vedic culture, in all cultures throughout the world, there were different roles. And as Prabhupada pointed out, however much we try to make the roles the same, there'll always be one major difference between men and women, that men don't have children. They do, but through women. Women bear children. Prabhupada once, spoofing the claims of the equal rights for women's movement, was saying that, well, why don't we make it that one time a woman has the child and the next time the man bears the child? What do you think, doctor? We have a few doctors just arrived here. Are you going to, you think we can adjust the male body so that it can bear children in future? Post-dated check? Men and women, now we're not talking about the pure spirit soul here, we're talking about conditioned souls in the material world, which we, most of us are, the overwhelming majority. If anyone here is a pure devotee, please let us know, and then we won't include you in the categories here. But we are in this. I mean, there might be some of us here who have come from the spiritual world directly to uplift us all. So, if so, then you can kindly let us know. Otherwise, we're all here due to our forgetfulness of Krishna. We're all conditioned souls. And we inherit different mentalities according to our previous activities, previous and present activities and association. So the male and the female body bring along with them different kind of mentality that is very strong in women, the desire to have children, because their body is made for that. And they're also very much suited for directly looking after children. And that's practically the most important role there is in society, is bringing forth and looking after, caring for the next generation. That's why in Vedic culture it's said that the first guru is the mother. She's the first to teach about anything. So, in a lot of emphasis is given in Vedic culture to bringing forth good progeny who can uphold, by their behavior and by their example, they can uphold the culture, because it's understood that human life is very rare. It's very rare and it's very valuable, because only in the human form of life do we have the opportunity to cultivate Krishna consciousness and go back home, back to Godhead. But it's not such an easy task. It requires much guidance, proper guidance throughout life, because it's very easy to fall victim of bad association. Therefore, it's understood that if children are guided from the beginning of their lives, and if they're brought into a nurturing culture, one that nurtures their Krishna consciousness, then that will give them the good opportunity to perfect their lives by Krishna consciousness. As Srila Prabhupada writes in one purport, there are two major factors which are very favorable for going back to Godhead. One is to have a bona fide spiritual master, and the other is to be born in a family of Vaishnavas. It gives a tremendous opportunity. So in the Vedic culture, not everyone may have been a Vaishnava, but everyone understands that human life is meant for elevation. And that begins with birth. Birth comes in two phases. One is one begins within the womb. In the ovum. No? It begins with the mixture of the male and female bodily particles. So even the act of begetting children, there's so much science behind that in Vedic culture. What should be the consciousness of the man and the woman, how they should purify themselves before uniting. The purification process is not just on the day before or one or two days before, but even how they're married, they're very carefully put together, and how they live with each other. So even before the act of male and female uniting, there's so much consideration. There's so much consideration put into marriage. Who can marry who, and under what circumstances, and what time and date? Because it's a very serious business, bringing forth children. So even before the man and woman unite to beget a child, there's so much consideration. Then in the womb, the child is nurtured by hearing Shastra, and then upon birth, and then throughout life, but especially the formative years for children, the first years, are extremely important. And it's mostly traditionally it's mostly the women who look after children. We find in Bhagavad Gita that Arjuna's main argument for attempting to avert the upcoming slaughter was that women would be left unprotected, which would result in unwanted progeny, which would be a disaster for human society. So in Vedic culture there is paramount, practically social, in terms of social organization, practically paramount is the emphasis put on bringing forth good children. And women's role in that, as mothers, that is also paramount. The division is the division of work, or the division of activities, that children, the young girls, are trained from an early age with the idea that they are to be mothers in future. We see that's a natural tendency, that young girls, even from the age of 4 or 5, they're practically just babies themselves. They feel attracted to pick up little babies and carry them around and look after them. We don't see young boys doing that, but young girls, they're naturally attracted to do that. Even in the West, where they don't, or now here also, they don't have big families, so there are not so many babies coming all the time. But the traditional toy for a young girl is a baby doll. And then they invented dolls for young boys also, but they had G.I. Joe instead. A different kind of mentality. Different mentality is there. That's recognized by the toy manufacturers. So the training is different. The division of labor is different for a purpose, for producing good progeny. And a major part of that producing good progeny and maintaining sanity and order in society is keeping under control or regulating the very powerful attraction between male and female, which is the basis of material existence. Pumsastriya mitsani bhavametam tayoraho hridaya grantimahu. The basis of material existence is the attraction between male and female, which forms a very strong knot on the heart. And the attraction between male and female, in other words, is that which binds one in the material world. So the Vedic social order, Varnashram system, Prabhupada writes in one place that the main purpose of this is to help people to become detached from sexual attraction. That order that is there, the restriction of association between male and female, very strict in many ways. Again, it's not only in Varnashram culture. Previously, throughout the world, it was like that. Practically, we could say throughout the world that we could measure the development of a civilization by the extent to which it regulates interaction between male and female. Civilization is not a question of building big buildings, of developing machines, because we see that societies which have developed big buildings and sophisticated machines very often, or usually actually, the moral or behavioral level of such people is below that of what they call savages. They consider someone to be uncivilized if they don't have hot and cold running water, or if they don't have all modern technological facilities. But Vedic culture is measured in terms of development of consciousness, and the consciousness cannot develop, one cannot develop higher consciousness. It's an axiomatic statement, if he's cultivating lower consciousness. And lower consciousness means, everything is discussed in Gita and Bhagavata, kaam, krodh, lobh, mada, matsarya, kaam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya. All the lower qualities, beginning with lust. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, and madness or intoxication. So, Vedic culture seeks to regulate the lives of persons in this material world. Everyone is inclined to fall down. Everyone is inclined to the lower activities, but Vedic culture is an elaborate arrangement whereby everyone is engaged according to their psycho-physical propensities, and the society is regulated in such a way that one can control the lower propensities and at the same time be guided by spiritually advanced people, so that one can gradually overcome these lower propensities and develop the highest propensity, which is love of Krishna. So if male-female association, if there's no restriction, if there's free mixing, then minds are uncontrolled, senses become uncontrolled, bodies become uncontrolled, and there's chaos in society. There cannot be any proper order if in Srila Prabhupada's graphic language, people are living like cats and dogs. Prabhupada pointed out that modern so-called civilization is like that of cats and dogs, because there is no regulation of the sexual propensity. Simply, as Prabhupada pointed out, there's no marriage ceremony in the cat and dog society. So even marriage in the modern age, it's having lost its religious significance. It is, as many people say, no more than a piece of paper. It's something which can be broken, just like that. It's not even those who do marry, it's not considered It's considered an arrangement of convenience. But the marriage in every religious culture of the world is a religious sacrament. In other words, there's an arrangement for man and woman to live together and bring forth children as an act of service to God, actually. It's not, it differs from the animal propensity. Yes, it's meant for this sex life, which is basically an animalistic propensity, if engaged in as a service to God for bringing forth good progeny. That, Krishna says, that karma smi bharatarsham dharmavi ruto bhuteshu karma smi bharatarsham, that sex life which is meant for which is not against the principles of religion, which is meant for bringing forth good progeny, that is considered such an important service to society that Krishna identifies that this is a representation of me. So this Vedic culture, which Prabhupada... let me just finish that point. So this regulation of male and female association, that husband and wife should unite in marriage, that is important to restrict free cat and dog-like association and to bring forth good progeny and not run the risk of bringing forth bad progeny. So it's all with a reason. People who are on the gross platform, who don't accept that there is a soul, who don't accept that there's a spiritual purpose to life, They can't see all these things. They can't accept all these things because they think that we're here today and gone tomorrow, so let us enjoy as much as we can now. So it requires a spiritual perspective to understand all these points. Now, we find that Srila Prabhupada, as I was saying, throughout his books, conversations, and Prabhupada was often praising the Vedic culture, and many times he spoke that one of the purposes of the Krishna consciousness movement is to revive the Vedic culture, which is quite different from the modern way of life, which has evolved. It's the history of the modern world, or the modern mindset. It's a complex social and cultural history. There are various turning points in that. The Enlightenment, the age of the Enlightenment, when in the Western countries, early scientists started to find that everything in the Bible doesn't tally with our sensual perception, especially the apparent discovery that the sun doesn't go around the earth, but vice versa. This was a major turning point in man's belief in the Bible and biblical authorities. And further scientific discoveries made man confident that he could understand the universe and control it. And thus there is no need for God, and then there is the Industrial Revolution with all the tremendous social, economic and cultural changes that brought in. And previously families all over the world tended to be what sociologists call extended families, in which the brothers of one man would live together with their families and have lots of children, and basically agrarian based society. But with the Industrial Revolution, then the urbanization took place, and families became nuclear families. In modern Hindi parlance, hum do hamare do, we are two and we have two. Or hum do hamare ek, we are two and we have one. Gradually the consumer age came up, in which to produce more and more goods it required people to buy them, and so the workers who moved to the cities became they became consumers. They were required to buy more and more things, and women's traditional economic roles at home, apart from looking after children, they had important in agrarian societies. Women, apart from looking after children, looking after their home, they would also engage in handicrafts and assist with harvesting, sowing, reaping. They had important economic roles, but increasingly with the machine age and everything's done by machine, cleaning the floor is done by machine, washing the clothes is done by machine, there are no fires to build or clean up because heating is done by machine, and so women got left at home doing nothing, and they became dissatisfied. They had no meaningful economic role and not much of a social role to play either, because they only had one or two children. So they also wanted to go to work and feel as if they were... Anyways, it's a long, complex social history, how society has changed, and the traditional roles of women have changed also. Nowadays, the women are also expected to work and bring in money. But the problem with that is that their role as mothers becomes secondary or even an obstacle. Because if they're trained in college career, then they want to be college, then they want to have a career. But bearing children and looking after children is, if done properly, looking after children is a full-time job. But many women prefer to leave their children in the care of someone else, which means that the children don't grow up with their mother's love. And women are not trained to be mothers, they're trained to be Miss World, to be, or they're brought up to think of themselves. The modern society also has changed the role of women, the perceived role of women, from being mothers, which is considered just to be a housewife in modern society. That's considered, oh, you're useless. It's actually the most important thing to look after children. But the propaganda is, you're useless, you should go to work, you should have a career. So this propaganda is there, and women also, because in the modern society we have to sell so many objects, so the main advertising ploy is sexual attraction. Everything from toothpaste to car tires, neither of which got anything to do with sex. They're sold on the sexual attraction by showing some pretty woman. So the man thinks, well, if I buy this tire, then I'll be attractive to women, somehow or other. I don't know how it works, but... So, again, I'm very much simplifying. But women in the modern age, from a young age, they are brought up to think of themselves, instead of developing the motherly affection, they become tigresses to capture men and have. And so it's quite common in the modern age that even by their early teens, young girls have had several sexual partners, which means that the most important, according to Vedic culture, the most important quality for a woman, which is chastity, they cannot have that. Chastity and shyness, these are the qualities which maintain the dignity and womanness of women. And maintains sanity in society by not stoking or exacerbating the sexual propensity, by keeping it cool as much as possible. But that is, the propaganda in the modern age is quite different. So this is the society that we are living in, and that Srila Prabhupada started his preaching in. Prabhupada, as anyone who reads his books will know, he didn't have, in general, he didn't have a very high opinion of modern so-called civilization. And he wanted that the Krishna conscious movement bring in a new way of life, new for the Western world, a spiritually based way of life. Prabhupada had the bold ambition to change the whole cultural outlook of modern society, because he saw that if Krishna consciousness is going to develop and become the way of life of people, then the culture in which it is traditionally based, in which is described in Shastra, that has to go with it. Because the West, every culture in the world has either an explicit or implicit underlying set of values or philosophy. In Vedic culture, it's clear what it is. It's based on the Vedic literature. In modern society, it's not strictly defined. It's not. It cannot be strictly defined by its eclectic nature. But basically, its foundation is the belief that life is a product of matter, and that therefore life is meant for enjoyment of the senses, and that everyone should have as much freedom to pursue enjoyment of the senses as is possible. So therefore, for instance, if one is married to someone but you don't like them, then it is justified to kick them out the door, because after all, we're only here once and we have to enjoy life. So this is the underlying philosophy of modern society. That's why you see Prabhupada was so much, he wanted to expose evolutionary theory as being bogus, because it's the substratum of modern society. It's the atheistic substratum on which all the degradation of modern society. Basically, we can say the prophets of modern society, the leading prophets, are Darwin and Freud. Freud's theories were based on Darwin. Freud himself was a complete madman and drug addict and a very perverted person, because he felt sexual attraction towards his mother. He thought that everyone feels like that. So anyway, so every society has an underlying mind. Freud, he's maybe the most influential thinker in the whole of modern society. So he was. Basically, to put it simplistically, he was recommending that all sexual taboos be lifted. He was saying that all the problems in society are caused by sexual taboos. It was round the other way, actually. Problems are caused by not restricting, or not regulating them, or attempting to overcome the sexual propensity. So anyway, this is modern society, we're living in it, and we will tend to be affected by it as much as we do not fully accept the teachings of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And if we associate with materialistic people, we tend to become affected by their bad association. And we find in the modern world that they're very strongly it is presented, the women's rights movement or the feministic movement has very strongly presented a reinterpretation of history, that the whole history of the human race, they say, is one of men exploiting women. Women have not had the same rights as men, and this is a historical aberration which needs to be righted, that women should have the same rights as men in all respects. So Srila Prabhupada was preaching in this Western world. Prabhupada was quite open about his disdain for the women's rights movement. As one lady reporter he was speaking with him, Prabhupada was quite straightforward on the point that men, she was asking that, well, don't you think men and women should be equal? Prabhupada said they cannot be equal. It is not possible, because different. It's not a question of should we give equal roles and different rights, because they are different. Men can't do some of the things women can do, especially bearing children and looking after them in the way that women do. We can't breastfeed them also. It's not something we can't do. And women, there are things that in general women, that men can do that women can't. Of course, nowadays they have women's weightlifting and women's boxing and all these kind of very strange things. But generally women are known as the weaker sex. They may be strong in some ways, that they can work in the fields in traditional society, but there's certain physical activities that women are not suited to do in general that men can do. For instance, I was told that because they say that women and men should have all exactly the same rights, so in America they said that, okay, we can have, as well as fire men, we should now have fire women. But hardly any of the women could, they weren't strong enough to pick up the hose, which means that they're useless as firemen or firewomen, because the basic thing a fireman has to do is pick up the hose, right? But if you can't do it, then you can't fight the fire. So they had to change the stipulation so that women, to fit the law, they had to change the minimum level of strength to be a fire person. But as a result, the women are completely useless. Because they want to pretend that women and men can do the same thing, but actually they can't in most cases. So it's a foolishness of modern society to think that women and men must be equal in all respects, even if they're patently not. So Prabhupada is quite open about this, and as in one interview, one lady reporter said that as Prabhupada was explaining these things, so she sarcastically asked that, so according to you, all the problems in society are caused because women are not submissive to men. She said it sarcastically, and Prabhupada said, yes. And this is the cause of so many problems. And Prabhupada explained these points in great detail. Now, yes, this lady became angry and went out. But Because, according to feministic theories, submission is considered to be demeaning, and it's considered that men are exploiting women by saying that they should be taken an inferior role. So there's possibility for exploitation there, no doubt. But submissiveness is required because women are to be protected by men. And as Prabhupada explained, a 16-year-old boy can travel all over the world alone, but a 16-year-old girl cannot. She requires protection. Otherwise, she's likely to be sexually misused. In the modern age, there's so much increase in sexual crimes and rape and all this kind of thing. But if women are trained, it's that you should dress up and act in a most seductive manner and mix freely with men, and the young girls, they can just go out by themselves, and they don't have to tell their parents where they're going, and they can come back anytime. In other words, they throw themselves out in the public and in a most and trying to be sexually attractive. Then what do you expect? You can't have protection and independence. The two things don't go together. Protected means you have to accept that, and that there's some restriction. So Vedic culture emphasizes protection of women over freedom. You can't have both things. So Prabhupada spoke very strongly on this. He even said that independent woman means prostitute. She has no protector, no one to oversee, no guardian. That means free to go here and there as she likes, but that is not a respectable position. So Prabhupada was preaching in the West and trying very successfully bringing people to Krishna consciousness. He saw the situation in the Western world that it's not very suitable. It's not an intrinsically suitable or favorable culture as the traditional Indian culture is for practicing Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada made some adjustments. For instance, in India there was no question that a young girl could join an ashram, because she was to stay at home under the protection of her father, who would arrange for her marriage. Prabhupada himself married a girl who was 11 years old at the time. That was the norm. The girls would be married before puberty. Nowadays that would be called child abuse. That was the norm. Actually, it's child abuse. According to Shastra, it's child abuse if the father doesn't arrange the marriage before puberty. That is called child abuse, according to Vedic culture. So you can see what a completely opposite perspective there is. So Prabhupada arranged that young women could live in his centers separately from men, of course. In the beginning, Prabhupada didn't stress very much on all these finer points of Vedic culture. He was just trying to bring people to Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada's first woman disciple, Jadurani Devi, she explained how Prabhupada had engaged her in painting for Krishna, but after several days of seeing her coming in and painting in the ashram dressed in shorts, Prabhupada suggested to her that she wear something more, what should we say, decent. She shouldn't wear shorts. So in the beginning, Prabhupada introduced these things. He didn't even attempt. In the beginning, Prabhupada just brought everyone in and chant Hare Krishna. One thing he did is that he, boyfriends and girlfriends, he got them married. So in the beginning days of our movement, Prabhupada didn't attempt to introduce all these finer points of Vedic culture, although he'd written about them in his purports, even in the first canto of Bhagavata. He'd written about this, for instance, in the first canto of Bhagavata, which Prabhupada wrote before he came to the Western countries, he described how, he gave a purport on how when Krishna entered Dwaraka, all the ladies came to see him from the roof of the palaces. And Prabhupada mentioned how they didn't go up and mix on the street with the men because they were preserving the quality of shyness, which is essential in human society. So Prabhupada wrote about these things, but in the beginning he wasn't trying to force that. And in the beginning, in many ways, the devotees still had many of the social and cultural ways of living and thinking, and to which they were adding Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada, he commented in one purport that in the Western countries, it's not possible to separate men and women as is traditional in India. So we're engaging both men, as a policy, we're engaging both men and women in preaching work, and it's having good results. Now, what happened was that in the early days, it was just like in the kirtans, men and women would be mixed up. There was no one side for men, one for women, or men at the front, women at the back, or vice versa, all mixed up. But gradually some more decorum was introduced into the society. And it doesn't seem that there was any particular one point in time when it happened, but gradually men and women, they didn't dance in kirtan together, and some of the more traditional practices became introduced. How did this happen? Well, there's a paper which was produced by feminists within our movement. I say feminist, that term is not liked by the feminists within our movement, but feminist by definition is one who believes that women should have all rights in equal respect to women as men. So practically it fits, this definition. So she wrote that in the early days of the movement, we would, for instance, we would all circumambulate Tulsi together, but then later on the nasty sannyasis introduced that we should do separately, but Prabhupada didn't introduce these things. So, but my understanding is that what happened is rather Prabhupada brought devotees to India because, as he said, he one of the reasons Prabhupada wanted to bring Westerners to India, he said that he wanted them to learn about the traditional culture here, which is very valuable for their spiritual uplift. And so by going to India and seeing how people lived, and by reading what's in Prabhupada's books, devotees gradually came to understand that the hippie way of doing things is not the ideal. So gradually some separation of the sexes was introduced. And Prabhupada was certainly aware of this, and he didn't stop this. For instance, he suggested that, or said that in Los Angeles in the temple there's a balcony at the back of the temple, and he suggested that the women could, in the temple's kirtans, they could stand there. In other words, he was saying there should be some separation. And Prabhupada joked that they'll be dancing on the heads of the men. So it wasn't that Prabhupada was unaware of this. Now, there were some excesses also, no doubt. Because the weaker section of society tends to be vulnerable. In Vedic culture, women, Brahmins, old men, children, and cows are to be protected. But just like we see in the Bible, in Genesis, it's stated that man was given dominion over the animals by God. So certain men interpreted this to mean that instead of looking after the animals, they should eat them. So it's a gross misinterpretation. So there were some severe excesses, no doubt. I remember in London, in the temple, in Berry Place temple there, it was a very crowded living situation. On average, there must have been about 50 or 60 devotees living in a building which was not meant for residential purposes at all. And often it was more than that, and devotees would be sleeping on where the stairs turned, and the stairs a little bit bigger. That would be a space for someone to sleep sometimes, because it was that crowded. So men and women were living, of course they had separate quarters, but they were very close together, and they didn't mix up with each other, but there was no loose mixing, but I would say there was basically, I felt there was a good respect for the, at least I as a young brahmachari there felt respect for the brahmacharinis, because they were all senior to me as devotees, and they were doing all the deity service, and everyone, all the devotees very much appreciated that. Anyway, one time a sannyasi came and he started giving some very heavy lectures about how women are all, you know, this and that, and none of us felt very comfortable with that. And one devotee asked, one of the brahmacharis asked, well, shouldn't we see all women as our mothers? And he said, no, you should see them all as tigresses come to suck your blood. And one devotee said to me after that, which was a shocking thing to say, but he said that he won't last long as a sannyasi. And actually he didn't. Because instead of seeing women as his mothers to be respected, he saw them as his enemies. But actually the enemy was within himself. So there were certain excesses. I hope that, I feel that at least in that situation in London, we didn't at least overtly or subscribe to that move. But we have heard that one, also ex-sannyasi, used to encourage that whenever a woman, means a devotee, should be respected as devotees one person, that the brahmacharis were supposed to spit, which is offensive, based on a misunderstanding of the verse which Prabhupada often used to quote, Nishthivanam. When I think of sex, I spit. That means he's spitting at his own bad desires. Not that you're supposed to spit on women. It's offensive. So some offenses, some, maybe many, because women are weaker and they may have been exploited to, not maybe, but were misused misunderstanding of various of Prabhupada's instructions. So Prabhupada, in the beginning, he gave sannyas very liberally, and he got boyfriends and girlfriends who joined together, married, or got devotees married. But later he saw, in the last 2-3 years Prabhupada was present with us, he spoke a lot about Varnashram. It appears that Prabhupada was seeing that he initiated many people. In the beginning he was very liberal in awarding initiation, but after some time Prabhupada saw that so many are coming and falling away again. So Prabhupada was talking about the need to introduce Varnashram, to regulate society, to help devotees to remain steady in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada wanted to implement this culture. So how does this all apply to us here today in Krishna consciousness, trying to practice Krishna consciousness? What are the gender roles? What is the controversy? It's quite complex issues, because it may appear that what Srila Prabhupada wrote about women and their role is to be supportive to men. Several times he wrote that women are less intelligent, which is also a controversial point. And how does that tally with how Prabhupada behaved with his women disciples? He often, he didn't actually he didn't appoint any as temple presidents or GPCs, but he engaged them in preaching activities. Sometimes he would have them lead kirtan, sometimes give lecture on stage with himself present. So how is this to be understood in light of Prabhupada's repeated teachings of a different kind of social role? Turn this fan off and turn another one on, because that one's very noisy. If you need a fan at all. Maybe we can just leave the fans off and then have a clear sound. It's been promoted that women devotees should have the same opportunities to be temple presidents, GPCs, give classes, lead kirtans, and so on. I'm one of these misogynist, it's a word I learned when I was called once, means a woman hater. Because I don't agree with this. I don't feel that it's Srila Prabhupada's overall policy, and I'll explain why. That Prabhupada wanted to establish this Vedic culture and society in which there are clearly defined roles. It is the God-given system which is meant for nurturing and fostering spiritual uplift. Whereas the modern society, it seems they think that they have got all the answers. They think that previous societies were primitive and wrong and unfair, and we know better. But as I've been saying in the last 2 days, I mean, I think most of us in the Western countries, at least from my generation, one major factor in our taking the Krishna consciousness was understanding that, as Prabhupada pointed out, Prabhupada articulated what many of us were feeling, is that modern society is just it's a total disaster. What is it? That's why we felt it. It's basically all wrong, and everything that we're brought up to believe and the whole role, the social roles we're all brought up in, it's just
harsh.
It's just, it's antithetical to our actual self-interest. So Prabhupada wanted to introduce this a way of life which is given by Krishna himself through the Shastra, and which has been nurtured throughout the ages by generations of saintly persons. Whereas modern society, as Prabhupada pointed out, is based on a mistake, Darwin's folly. So the importance of introducing this is it's a major factor in our Krishna consciousness. I personally feel that however much we're preaching and we put a lot of emphasis on preaching and distributing books, which is good. But what's happening is that we're bringing people in, but mostly people, they can't stay. They can't remain strong devotees because we don't have the social backup. We're trying to live according to the template of modern society. We're trying to put Krishna consciousness on the basis of the modern way of life. It doesn't fit. It's like, for those of you who understand computers, it's something like trying to run Windows software on a Linux background. It doesn't work. The aims and objects of modern society are quite opposed to those of Krishna consciousness. So if we think that we can live with our Western way of thinking, the culture that we've been brought up in, and just add Krishna consciousness, and then that's perfect. The Western value or modern values, but the modern values are demonic. They won't help us to be Krishna conscious. So Krishna consciousness actually means a total change of way of thinking based on that which is given to us by Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And if we think, well, I'll maintain my Western way of thinking or modern way of and be Krishna conscious, but it doesn't work because the modern way of thinking is all wrong. It's apaswara, it's out of sync with our actual self-interest. So, according to the modern way of thinking, that women should have subdued roles is considered demeaning to them and exploitive of them. But actually that is considered the dignity and honor of a woman. And actually, by the subtle feminine method, they can fulfill their desires materially, even on the material platform. That if a woman is, if she serves her husband and satisfies him, then he will be pleased to act in such a way that is pleasing to her. This is on the material platform. And even in Krishna consciousness, for maintaining peace in the home, if a woman takes the role of the servant of her husband, at least we understand from Shastra and we see practically, it will tend to make a peaceful situation. Now, this is a very complex thing. Submissive doesn't mean that she necessarily accepts everything that he says without... She may remonstrate in some cases. We see that Sita Devi sometimes, for instance, advised Ram not to kill so many animals, but he didn't accept her idea, but she said anyway. And Kunti Devi, she remonstrated with Pandu when he wanted, after having three sons by the call a demigod system, he wanted more, and she also didn't agree to that. Arguments were presented on the basis of dharma. Anyway, the relationship between men and women is extremely complex, can be generally, but I'm going to speak on general principles here. But it may be that in some ways women are also as capable of men in some ways, but I feel that it's so important to establish these social roles, to put society and to put our own society with all its social problems on the right footing, that we require to, that actually a very important part of preaching is that we establish this Varnashram system, that if we just go on socially trying to run our society according to Western values, then we'll forever be plagued with the social ills of modern society. Unless we can present a better alternative, then our principles will, in the eyes of the world, or even in the eyes of our own devotees, remain largely theoretical only. For those who are not strong enough to make a very strong commitment to Krishna consciousness, take sannyas. That also we're finding, not everyone who takes sannyas, they even make that commitment, they're not able to maintain it. But this mutual support of families is very much required. Otherwise, what happens is that people take to Krishna consciousness, but they can't maintain. Because basically, we don't know how to live as human beings. Live as human beings means to follow the Vedic directions. If we live according to the modern way of life, that's not human, it's subhuman. So it requires to be instituted in human society. Prabhupada recognized the difficulty of his Western lady disciples to follow all these things, and did give allowance for that, but it certainly wasn't his idea that this it'd be like that forever. Prabhupada said that the daughters of our devotees, they should be trained to read and write so they can read my books. And apart from that, they should be trained how to cook very nicely, and they should be trained in the principles of chastity, so they should be faithful to their husband. This is how Prabhupada wanted the daughters of his disciples to be educated. Unfortunately, this is not preached in ISKCON today. Rather, it's advertised that young girls should be have a good education so they can have a good career. They can be, in other words, they're being educated to be independent, which I already quoted Prabhupada's idea of what independent means. Now, it is rationalized that, well, let's be realistic, that after all, we are living in the modern world, so we have to live according to its terms, and therefore we can give our young children a better start in life by giving them a demoniac education so that they can also be good demons and be Krishna conscious at the same time, if they feel like it. However, that wasn't Srila Prabhupada's approach, and I'm one of those fundamentalists, as it's called, who believe that though, even though there may be difficulties in doing so, no doubt, it is our duty as followers of Srila Prabhupada, and we can only really call ourselves followers of Srila Prabhupada if we try to, unless we try to implement what he has given. And it is difficult, and in many ways we are guinea pigs. For those of you who don't know, are not native English speakers, it's an idiom which means that guinea pigs are a type of rodent that are experimented on by demoniac scientists. So we're in an experiment. So we can expect that in the first one or two generations, if we're trying to bring in a cultural revolution by following the Vedic direction, we can expect there will be difficulties, no doubt. Although we do have the assurance that Krishna is on our side, Krishna wants to help us, that we do actually have the right process. How to implement it, it's not an easy job. But on the other hand, if we just surrender to the Western way of thinking and acting, then we'll have the difficulties that that engenders, such as birth, death, old age, disease, divorce, and on and on and on. So I would say that one of the worst abuses of women and of men, and definitely of children, is that in our movement, divorce is tacitly accepted. It's more or less considered okay. Divorce, remarriage, it's a social crime, especially against children. But it's just considered normal in our modern ISKCON. This needs to be addressed. Why is this coming about? Srila Prabhupada, who is... yesterday we were discussing how some of our academically advanced, or degraded according to your outlook, our academically advanced god siblings have decided that Prabhupada's outlook is Victorian Bengali influenced, and therefore he didn't understand his Western disciples. And what it comes down to is that divorce, remarriage, and all these kind of things, they're okay. Prabhupada didn't understand us. Prabhupada understood us much better than we understand ourselves. And therefore, he wanted to introduce all these things. Therefore, he wanted to introduce this Vedic culture. He understood that we're cats and dogs. We're coming from that kind of background. And he wanted to civilize us. Therefore, he wanted to introduce these things. Now, it may be that there are exceptions. In fact, especially in the Western world, we could say that almost everyone's an exception, because everyone's brought up in this wrong way of life. But then if we try to make the exception the rule, instead of trying to adjust ourselves to the social system given by Krishna, the social roles given by Krishna, if we just say, well, everything's different nowadays, therefore we should go along with the modern culture. And then we go along with the modern culture, but where's it going? The modern culture is not going towards Krishna. Modern culture is a freeway to hell for everyone who's on it. So, what we're talking about, it's not very easy, no doubt, to understand the different social roles that people are supposed to observe. Men also, as is often pointed out, they don't act responsibly as men should. But that doesn't mean that we should just forget the whole thing. Train, preach to men. Preach to women, bring up children in such a manner that they understand these social principles. As I was pointing out yesterday, we need to do this within our own communities. It's very difficult to do so if we are mixed up with modern society. But surrendering to the modern way of thinking and the modern way of life and the modern social roles, this is not going to help us. Then we are forced to compromise. Compromise is inevitable. Unless we follow Srila Prabhupada, try to understand what he said to us and try to implement it, then ipso facto, it means by that fact alone, then we have to compromise. So we really don't have any choice. Or we have this much choice. We have a choice to try to implement the social roles and the whole culture and all the instructions of Prabhupada. Or we have the choice either do it or not do it. And at present time, we've chosen not to do it. We've chosen to say that, well, everyone's equal as spirit soul, and therefore everyone should just have equal rights and act in the same way, which is actually a sahajiya mentality, because sahajiyas, they don't, without seeing that we are not fully advanced, they pretend to act on that platform. So if one is absolutely a pure devotee who sees no difference between man and woman, then there may be no need of restrictions in association. Just like Narad Muni, he kept the wife of Hiranyakashipu, Kayadhu, in his ashram. Brahmacharis aren't supposed to keep women in their ashrams. If we find out, then it's a scandal. The way things are going, it'll be normal in a few years. But it's wrong. But for Narad Muni, it was possible because he was beyond sexual attraction. But if we simply pretend that, yes, we're all devotees, as Prabhupada said, women who join this movement, they're not ordinary women, they're devotees. Or Prabhupada said that once one becomes a devotee, that women, they're less intelligent, it doesn't apply. Then we have to see what is meant by devotee, because due to lack of carefulness, so many fall downs have come. So many sannyasis have fallen down. How do they fall down? With women. Lack of carefulness in associating. So if we artificially say that, or if we try to assume that we're all devotees, therefore we should have no restrictions in mixing, it's artificial. It's not the traditional culture which is meant for spiritual advancement. A few years ago I saw a photograph of a Vaishnav etiquette course being conducted at some center, and they had different tables, and men and women were sitting together at the same table, and this is supposed to be Vaishnav etiquette. And the first principle, there's no need for them to do it, because the men could have sat at one in separate tables, the women and others, but I guess they had to show that we don't observe this kind of thing, because we're beyond, but we're not, let's be honest, we're not beyond. Therefore there should be restriction. Now, it's a complex issue, but these are some basic principles that I'm trying to speak of. And if there are any questions or comments, I'd like to take them now. The fanatical brahmacharis all got married, didn't they?
So I don't know how to respect the brahmacharis.
Right, training is required. I must say that it's still going on. I mean, so many times I have to tell the men to move over and give some space for the women. And when they're dancing, not to crush the women against the wall, which they often do unthinkingly. It's a very good point you've brought up. We should begin bringing in these demarcations by respecting women, honoring them in the best way. Not that always we have to think that they have to be, not that that they because they are supposed, there is their honor to have a submissive role, that therefore we should just crush them. That means that's the demoniac mentality, actually, that because socially men have a superior role, therefore we should crush and exploit them. Just like in the old days, the sannyasi had a superior position, so they used to, sannyasi used to mean like the heaviest, nastiest person, isn't it? That's how it used to be, because they'd be very heavy with others, but actually should be hopefully like a father or guide. Affection should be there. Affection. So let us preach and act that how we should respect our mothers, and then our mothers will be happy to act as mothers. Please.
Sometimes we're coming from backgrounds of
dysfunction, yes, modern society. Dysfunctional.
So many times we didn't respect our own sisters, or we hated our mother because she wasn't there for us, or
right, yeah. So we're all psychologically damaged. So let's become sane by chanting Hare Krishna and following the social Vedic social directions. Srila Prabhupada, here's a question. Or whatever. Srila Prabhupada encouraged that girls should train up as nuns and they need protecting, so how does this balance in our society? I don't find that Prabhupada encouraged girls to be trained up as nuns. He wanted them to, rather he stressed again and again that they should be married. He writes in the first canto, very near the beginning of the first canto of Bhagavatam, that everyone should be married, and especially every woman should be married. But Prabhupada said also that if some women, they don't want to get married, they could lead a celibate life. He said it would be very difficult for them. He did allow for that. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm not aware of Prabhupada ever stating that girls should be trained up as nuns. All men should brahmachari should remain single, and all women should get married. Contradiction. Polygamy, that's also that's a consideration. Anyway, let's get monogamy right first of all. Who's the nun? Yeah. Encourage means that I believe there was a women's ashram that was founded, and Prabhupada gave, it wasn't that Prabhupada said that girls should be trained up for this, but there were some women who wanted to do that, and Prabhupada allowed it, but he said you shouldn't have any big, he said it should be very simple and not make a big show and not so like that. Not that he wanted girls to be trained up. He wanted them to be trained up to be good wives. As you explained, Srila Prabhupada wrote something different about women than he was acting with them. How can we understand these controversial things? Also in general, because this is often the case. Yeah, it's often the case. See, as I was saying, almost in the modern society, everyone is trained differently. But Prabhupada wanted that. Prabhupada didn't force it, but he wanted that young girls, or his young lady disciples, if they could accept the traditional social roles. Prabhupada said to Burijan's Prabhu's wife, she said, I can't remember exactly, it's recounted in Burijan Prabhu's book, My Glorious Master, that she said to him, Prabhupada was talking about these social roles, she said, well, we're brought up so differently. She was a film actress before, which is just about the opposite of the, chaste wife. She said, it's so different to what we've been brought up with. Prabhupada said, but if you see something good, if you find something, if there's something good, why don't you accept it? So Prabhupada didn't force it, but he preached it. So we also can't force it, and we may also make allowance for those who they have this. Both men and women who have a very strong feeling that. No, we have to do it the modern way. We're not going to say, okay, just don't chant Hare Krishna. But I feel as a movement we should make it very clear what our social direction is, because and according to what to Srila Prabhupada's direction, so I personally believe that we're on the wrong track right now. As a man decides to be in brahmachari life and grihastha, a man decides to be a brahmachari, and a grihastha chooses brahmachari, the same way if a married couple wants to live without having a baby and just go on spiritual advancement as brahmacharis, is it wrong? It's not wrong, but Prabhupada would quote Manu that putrate kriyate bharya, one accepts a wife for the sake of having a son. So normally people get married to have children, and I actually know quite a lot about family life, even though in this life I haven't had a family of my own, because it's not ideal, but in the absence of local brahmanas or people or older people that others can look up to, I tend to be a family counselor in many cases. It would be better if senior grihasthas could do this, but often, there are not that many senior grihasthas. If we see someone's married to the same wife for 20 years, well done. It shouldn't be well done, it should just be normal, but unfortunately that's the way it is. So, I've seen several times that husband and wife, they decide to not have children so they can preach and practice Krishna consciousness together. But there comes a time, usually when the wife becomes almost desperate to have children. It seems to be a very strong feminine psychological need to have children. It's difficult to overcome, even if one is a devotee. Prabhupada mentioned about Gandhari, that even though she was a great personality, when Kunti gave birth before her, she became frustrated, Prabhupada said, due to her innate womanly weakness. She had some envy of Kunti and she beat her stomach. She thought, oh, now I spoil my baby. But instead she made baby into 100. 101, actually. You know, that wasn't 100. A daughter came out of that too. So, as a wife should be submissive to the husband, and if the husband is materially inclined but the wife is spiritually, how's it a suitable atmosphere be set up? Please advise. Yeah, now we're getting into the intricacies. There are many intricacies. Well, if the woman's more spiritually advanced than the husband, then she, you know, she be good if she could. There are actually many cases of this, and I know several cases of women who are more spiritually advanced than their husband. It's quite clear. But due to their spiritual maturity, they're able to serve him and satisfy him in such a way that he also comes along with them. I personally stopped a few divorces by just giving a little advice. Then just tell the wife to stop trying to force your husband. Just cool down, do what he wants, and then gradually you can bring him along. It works, actually. It's not just a theory, it works. Instead of the wife trying to dominate her husband, if she serves him submissively, and then if she's, that would be good for her, because it generally should be that the husband is more spiritually advanced, because he's traditionally, he would have spiritual training more than she, so he would be able to guide him because he'd been in the Gurukul. But it may be in the modern age, especially often you see the woman is more advanced than the man. But if she nevertheless serves him submissively, then she can gradually bring him along. But if she tries to force him and fight with him, then it never works.
I'd like to make a point.
Yeah, please.
That according to the Vedic conclusion, we should see women as our superiors. Because in the Vedic conclusion, we see women as mothers.
Yeah.
That means we are children.
Yeah.
That means we are inferior to them. So the fact that we protect women does not mean that we are superior.
Superior, yeah, in some ways, but also Prabhupada indicated that mothers under the controls of their sons are to be controlled by them also, because the protection is there. Anyway, it's really a moot point. Superior, yes. We should think of everyone as our superior.
But if we are the children,
yeah,
and their mothers, we are superior. We are inferior.
Generally, yeah. That was the old culture, right? But now they don't like that. You know, they don't like that. They don't want to be treated, they don't like to be called ladies. Well, they're imitating in another way. That's tomorrow's subject.
Then they would be inferior in that program. But if men and women act in the Vedic conclusion, by many people pretend that it is.
We shouldn't get too much hung up on superior and inferior. We should respect everyone. Right, the example of Pishima, shall I say? Pishima, that's Prabhupada's sister. She was a pure devotee of Krishna, as was Prabhupada, although not in the same stature as a preacher all over the world. But her life was glorious also. Somehow or other, Prabhupada's father married her in the family of fish eaters, which is very common in Bengal. And all her life she cooked fish for her husband, although she never ate it once in her life. She performed her stri dharma of serving her husband. And apparently her husband was degraded in many ways, but she went on serving him and he didn't interfere with her Krishna consciousness. And towards the end of life, he realized what a saintly wife he had. In the modern age, it's often very common. Is that all right? That's a synopsis. In the modern age, it's often very complex. There are all kinds of combinations and permutations. Sometimes the man is Krishna conscious, but the wife isn't. Or they both start off Krishna conscious, and but after some time, one of them decides not to be. Or someone's wife, after bearing two children, decides to become a lesbian. There's quite a few cases of it. It's horrible. Whoops, you're not supposed to say that, you get put in prison. So modern society is very complex because it's very degraded, actually. Because there's no restriction on sex, therefore human society is extremely complex and degraded. And they're so degraded that they think that homosexuality is normal and acceptable. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. Yeah, please.
Maharaj, if men and women in their ashram or brahmachari and brahmacharini, if there is some cause of conflict, should they not search their own hearts that Krishna is not a dominating, superior force where both husband and wife are submitted to Guru Sadhu?
Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, it's not that we're just saying women should be submissive, but everyone is supposed to be submissive. We're all Prakriti in relationship to Krishna. So everyone is submissive. The modern society promotes that you should be the rugged individual. Don't listen to anyone. Smoke Marlboro. But in Vedic culture, everyone is submissive. And submissiveness and humility are considered worshipable qualities. We can see in our tradition that there were women gurus like Mother Janava, Lord Nityananda's wife. Why not in ISKCON? Well, that's another big question going on. Intrinsically, spirit souls in women's bodies can also be gurus, but as Prabhupada, when he was asked about this, he said yes, there were cases, he also said Mother Janava, but in exceptional cases. Mother Janava was exceptional. She was the Swarup Shakti of Nityananda Prabhu. So, women anyway, they are gurus. They're the gurus of generally within the family setup. Generally, the social role of men, it's more conducive for the role of, it's a very outgoing kind of role generally. Hare Krishna. Does that mean the end, or someone didn't like what I was saying? Or what? Okay, well, alright, anyway, it's time to finish. I think I'll finish there. No?
All right. Hare Krishna.
It would seem in our movement that we haven't very well understood either what our social roles or Guru Tattva. So I would suggest that we investigate these very carefully before making major social changes. Guru Tattva means that every GBC meeting there's a new lore about what a guru is. It means we're still trying to find, still haven't understood. We change every year. Oh, really? That's not a question. How do you explain this statement that women are less intelligent? We're often asked that question when we're preaching. Well, it's explained by Srila Prabhupada in one of his purports. Women are considered less intelligent because generally they're more inclined to sense enjoyment. That's the answer given. It's a simple answer. And women they're more inclined, just like that, the need to have children and it's a general statement that they want house, wife, security, children, all this kind of thing. So women may be more intelligent in some ways, but in the most important way, what's considered most important in Vedic culture is self-realization. So the psychological makeup that one inherits along with a woman's body is less conducive to self-realization due to the less intelligent tendency towards sense gratification. That's the example of Prabhupada gave. Yeah, I'll do one more question and we'll finish. Yeah. Associating with the wife or the fiancé before marriage. That's also not traditional. You don't, woman and man and wife, man and wife, they traditionally see each other first time at the marriage. It's quite different to the modern way, isn't it? What should one do if the wife is rebellious and not submissive? Well, according to Shastra, one should abandon her. And in a Bengali book, which is published by an ISKCON devotee, about family life, it also says that one should, if the wife is not submissive, one should try to for some time, and if she's not submissive, you should leave her. That's the general direction given in Shastra. However, I'm very cautious in this. Because it's so easy for anyone just to say, oh, my wife isn't submissive, therefore I'm abandoning her. We should take this injunction very carefully. We shouldn't think that I just have a little argument with my wife and take it as an excuse to dump her. This is not good. We'll finish them. Hare Krishna.